Okay. So on the first pasuk of Parshas Chukas, the Torah says, "Yeah, you need a chumash here. I mean, it'll be helpful." Zayis Chukas haTorah. This is the law, the statute of the Torah. Speak to Klal Yisrael, v'yikhu elecha para aduma tamima. You should take to you, I don't know, 839?
Yeah,
so v'yikhu elecha, you should take to you, Rashi comments on what is it that the Pasuk is trying to suggest with the elecha, to you. What does it mean, take it to you? There's a message here about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu's para was eternal, recovered. That there was always some of Moshe Rabbeinu's para aduma added to the other burning of the red heifers that were made in later generations. So there's a really deep connection between Moshe Rabbeinu and the original Paraduma and the continuity of this mitzvah throughout the ages. Moshe Rabbeinu maintains his connection with that. So the Maranaim is going to shed some new light on some deeper meaning as to what is going on here. So he says as follows. He says that there are that area of Torah which is called the revealed Torah. And the revealed Torah, as we know, is you open up Sefer Torah, or a Chumash for that matter, and what is seen to the eye are first and foremost letters, right? So you have the structure, the words, and the letters of Torah. For somebody who's more knowledgeable, although it doesn't appear in the scroll of the Sefer Torah, there are vowels. So it's not haphazard. You can't just make up whichever way you want to read the Sefer Torah. There is a correct system of letters that go, of vowels that go with the letters. So there's a correct pronunciation, there's an incorrect pronunciation. In fact, there are certain instances where something is written in the Torah as one thing, but we know that the Mesorah tells us that it's to be read in another way. So there are certain letters that are ignored, there are letters which are added. Right, so that too is part of the exposed Torah, the revealed Torah, because it's been handed down from generation to generation, that this is the correct pronunciation based upon the nekudos. Nekudos are the vowels. So you have the osius, the letters, then you have the nekudos. Beyond that, another letter level of the revealed Torah are the tamim. The tamim is what we refer to as the trup. Right? So if you look in your chumash up on top of all the letters, you'll see that there are all kinds of squiggles and lines and those kinds of things, and that's in all of Tanakh. And that those are the tamim, that's the trup. Now the trup, aside from the fact that it helps the person who's reading from the Torah sound like they know what they're doing, more importantly, the trup hugely affects the actual meaning of the words. Because the trup not only tells you where to go up and where to go down, but there are many instances throughout Shas and where Rashi will draw from the trup. For instance, there's one of them that's actually not on the top. It's one of the trups that's on the bottom of the line in your Chumash. But that tells you where to pause. It separates the first half of the pasuk from the second half of the pasuk, and in numerous times throughout Torah, that has huge ramifications on the meaning. You could well imagine, even in English, the commas that we put in sentences can have huge ramifications in how we interpret a sentence. Well, in Torah, where the entirety of life depends on how we interpret any verse, the trup has huge ramifications. But that too, although it doesn't appear in the Sefer Torah, we know that that's part of the Torah that was given to us at Har Sinai. And as a result, it too has eternal ramifications as to how it affects the meaning in the revealed sense of Torah. There's times when a kadma va'azla has ramifications on how you interpret the pasuk. There's many times that the trop, most people think it's just just the way the Chazan or the Baal Kori reads the Torah. It has great impact on the meaning of the pasuk. So that's the third. The fourth level is something called the tagin. The tagin are the crowns of the letters. So many letters have small tagin. You don't see it in the Chumash, but it's in the Sefer Torah. And some of them have very flowery and more extravagant tagin. And those two, the Chazal tell us about certain tanoim that they darshined piles and piles of halachas based upon which letters have the tagin and which letters don't have the tagin. Now, all four of these categories, the letters, the vowels, the trop, and the tagin, are all considered part of the revealed Torah. That's all what's called the Hizgalus HaTorah, that which is revealed and open to anybody. That's the Torah de Hizgalia. Now, what's fascinating about the Torah de Hizgalia is you could walk into the library of the Lakewood Yeshiva, which is thousands and thousands of square feet full of Svarim, and the vast majority of those Svarim deal with the Izgalia de Torah, based upon one little book that you're holding in your hands, right? It's all based on this one book, and you'll have tens of thousands of volumes based upon the revealed section of Torah. And if a person applies themselves, they can acquire and ingest and understand whatever they want of that level of Hizgalus HaTorah. That's all accessible based upon human intellect. Now, of course, we know that there's human intellect and then there's human intellect, right? So there are people who their eyes begin to get hazy as soon as we hit a place in the Gemara where the Gemara begins to become difficult. All of a sudden, we find ourselves becoming very tired. And there are some people that can breeze their way through it. My Uncle Shia told me when he was here last week that he was in Beis Medrash LaTorah in Chicago when Reb Chaim Kreisvit, later to be the chief rabbi of Antwerp, was Rosh Hashiva there. So he suggested to my Uncle Shia that he and a Chavrus learn the tractate of Yuma, which is what Daf Yomi is learning now. So they learned it. I think they learned it for 2 months. And Reb Chaim said to them, don't worry about it. If you have any difficulties, write down your questions. And when I come into yeshiva at night, you'll ask me your questions. So Reb Chaim apologized to them that it had been 38 years since he had learned Yuma. Yet when they came to ask him any questions, he remembered the small commentaries on the bottom of the pages by heart with the language. 38 years since he had seen it. So there are intellects and there are intellects, right? I had somebody came over to me this morning and asked me something from 2 daf ago, and it was all news to me. It was, it was brand new. But whatever the case is, we know that on the level of the revealed section of Torah, that is the key element here, is that it's fully graspable to the human intellect. It's acquirable. Whether we will acquire it or not is not the issue. The issue is that there's a person out there who has the ability of acquiring that information. Yet we find that our sages tell us that if someone is accosted by their evil inclination, that they should grab a hold of the study of Torah. Why? Because Hamo'er Sheba Machzira Lemutav. The light or the illumination in Torah will return the person to their correct stage. So we're not talking about the knowledge. We're not talking about the Abaya and Rava and their disputes and all of the intricate details of the learning. That's not what's going to cause the person to do tshuva. But contained in it, contained in the body of Torah, there is some illumination that has the ability to take us back to where we belong. That's the power of Torah. Now, with what we're going to learn now, we're also going to discover, I believe, one of the answers to why it is that there are Torah scholars who are out to lunch, who have, who we know just by our observation, have not integrated Torah. They're not living Torah lives. They're very heavy up on top, with tremendous amount of knowledge, but it hasn't filtered down into their being. And the Maharnaim tells us how that is. He says that contained in this phenomenally intricate, I gotta go see a dentist. In all of this information of Torah, there is concealed a phenomenal light, Hamor Sheba. And what's critical to know about that light is that it's impossible to grasp it with the human intellect. It's way bigger than us. And as a result, it impacts us, but not because we're able to sink our teeth into it, not because we're able to grasp it with our minds. Only because it comes along with the accessible part of Torah study. It's part of the package. And what the Maharnaim says is that this is called the Ayin of Torah. Ayin spelled Aleph Yud Nun. Now, what does the word Ayin mean? We normally translate it as the nothing, right? In Ein, from the same root as the word not. But what it is it's Ayin because, as far as we're concerned, we can't grasp it. So it is ultimately it's the ungraspable, it's the intangible of Torah. We speak about the world being created as a yesh me'ayin, as something from nothing. What do you mean something from nothing? That's not a nice name to call God, right? We're saying the world is created out of nothing. Well, God's not nothing. But God is called an ayin. God is called the intangible, the inaccessible. That's the ayin. He's the ultimate ayin. The Rabbeinu Shlomo took his inaccessibility, the fact that he is the infinite, and concealed that in the body of knowledgeable Torah in order to give the human being a way to access it. In fact, you remember that in creation it says that Hashem created the light, and Chazal tell us, where is that light? So he says he saw that the wicked were destined to abuse it, so he concealed it. V'heichan ganzoi, says the Zohar, where did he conceal it? He concealed it in the Torah. So the Rebbeinu Shlomo took this infinite light and encapsulated it in the body of the knowledge of Torah. That Ayin is the same place from which all of Torah flows. So we're able to access the source of Torah, which is the Ayin, the infinite, through the Torah that Hashem created. Says the Maharnaim that what's incumbent upon us is that as we approach any study of Torah, any level of Torah, that we understand that we're always working on two levels. We're working at the understandable level, but that we always understand, no matter what it is that we're doing, in Torah and in mitzvahs, that there will always be a scratch at the surface, that's what we're doing, but that behind that scratch is an infinite bounty of light. That this is our key to opening up the infinite. And the infinite is not graspable, it's totally overwhelming to the human being. But that's our key, that's our entry. It's a pasuk of Chumash, it's a Mishnah, it's a Gemara, whatever it might be, it's a mitzvah. What we were given is a key to opening up the infinite. In fact, the entire concept of a chayk that we talked about so much in this past week, mitzvahs without reason, is really to drive home the fact that even when there is some tangible reason that we might be able to grasp in a mitzvah, that we should understand that that's not really where it's at. The Rebbeinu Shlomo is teasing us. It's a teaser. It's like what we do with our kids. With we want them to get to learn something, so we offer them a candy, right? Now, try convincing a kid that the real tachlis of you learning a pasuk chumash is to be able to eat a candy. Or for that matter, take the negative. Right? A kid, chas v'shalom, starts playing with a knife. So, you warn the kid once. The second time the kid plays with the knife, you spank him. Now, is the reason a kid should not play with a knife because he's going to get a spanking? That's obviously not the reason. The reason is because something much worse can happen if he plays with knives, right? So on both sides, we attempt, at the level of the child, to give them the understanding that they can comprehend, right? Both in the sense of the reward and in the sense of the punishment. With the full understanding that we as being bright, brilliant, mature adults, understand that there's something far deeper going on. Allah Kodesh Baruch Hu does the same thing with us, with Torah and mitzvahs. There are times when we have some tangible understanding, some reason for what it is that we're doing. But we should have the maturity to understand that due to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has infinite wisdom, that whatever it is that we're understanding is far less than the candy is to the child, or than the spanking is to the child. I don't remember who says this, but one of the Svarim points out a fascinating observation. We look in the Torah and we see the punishments for wrongdoing, right? And we see them as being very harsh. Yet, when it comes to any form of punishment that we're familiar with, take any penalty, whether it's in child raising or it's in society. So let's take a speeding ticket. So they slap us, and all of us agree that at some point there should be a penalty for speeding, right? If a person's driving 100 miles an hour on a 25-mile-hour street, everybody agrees that there should be a penalty. Now, what's the point? Everybody understands that the penalty has to be less than the crime, right? It's supposed to be a deterrent. But you only give a punishment because what could happen potentially is much worse than the punishment, right? So the Sefer says, I don't remember who it is, that we need to understand the same thing with the punishments in the Torah. That chet, that any avera that we do, we should learn from the punishment that the chet itself is far worse than whatever the punishment might be. Because otherwise, why would the Rebbeinu Shel Olam give a punishment or a deterrent unless the chet itself, unless the sin itself was manifold times worse than what the punishment is? So it's supposed to give us some kind of small understanding of what it is that's really going on You want to see how awful this certain chet is. It's so awful that the eating on Yom Kippur is so terrible that the punishment for it is kares. What that means is that eating on Yom Kippur is worse than kares. It's far worse than kares. Whatever happens, whatever we bring into existence by doing that chet is much, much worse than what the punishment is. We all judge it by the punishment. He says that's not the case. Obviously, the effect that we create by doing it is much worse than that. So when we approach Torah and Mitzvah, says the Maharnaim, obviously we got to do what we need to do. We have to do the action. We have to focus on the meaning of what it is that we're learning. But we dare not forget that what's really going on is that this is a portal to be able to access the Ayin, the infinite, that lies behind and is contained in what it is that we're going to study. Now there's a correspondence here between the human being and Torah. We know that that the Almighty, that Torah, and that Klal Yisrael are one. When we approach a human being, we understand that we're dealing with a body and a soul. Otherwise, we would more often talk to lifeless beings. When we only, generally speaking, we spend most of our time talking to living people, right? And we understand when we're talking, when we're interacting with somebody, that we're dealing with a combination of a neshama and a guf. What the Zohar is trying to point out by telling us that Torah and Klal Yisrael are one is that we need to approach Torah in the same way. And that is that there's a guf, there's a body of Torah, but there's a soul of Torah. The body of Torah is that which our mind can grasp, just like the body of another human being is tangible. The soul is intangible. They have yet to discover what the soul looks like under a microscope. No x-ray or CAT scan has been able to show what a neshama looks like. So too, when it comes to the study of Torah, we understand that there's a body. We got to understand that there's the laws. Take the laws of Borer. You can separate the fish from the bone, you can't take the bone from the fish, and all that kind of stuff. And we sit and learn it, and we wonder, what was God thinking? Right? When we learn these halachas. And what the Ribbono Shel Olam was thinking was, I'm giving you another way to grab a hold of my infinite light. Every detail in halacha, every detail in hashkafa, which is accessible to us, is another method of grabbing a hold of the capsule to be able to receive that which is contained within the capsule, and that is the infinite light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to remember, though, the only way to do it is by grabbing the capsule, though. There are all too many people who have decided that they're going after the light. Right? We have entire movements of people who are going after Kabbalah. Right? And they're grabbing a hold, they're trying to grab the light. You know what happens when you ever try grabbing a ray of light? That's exactly what happens with most of these people. They get high on the fumes. And that's where it ends. Because there's nothing tangible about it. It has to be encased in something that we actually get. We understand it. If we understand it, then it's contained in our minds. It becomes part of who we are. We own it, and if we remember that along with it, that this is a package, that just like we have a neshama and a body, so too is in Torah there a neshama and a body, and we grasp the body and are able to acquire the neshama, then we're dealing with a full-lifed being. Whereas if we only pursue either the body or the neshama of Torah, and we're not dealing with both, we end up with a Torah that is not going to impact us. It's not going to change who we are because we're dealing with only one component of Torah. Says the Maharnaim, this is based upon this premise, is a very, very beautiful interpretation into the concept of the Paraduma. The word para, as we know, means a cow. Chazal tell us that more than the calf wishes to nurse, the cow wishes to give of its nourishment to the calf. This Ur Hagonus, this infinite light which is contained in Torah, is called the Parah. It is that which wishes to give and to give in an infinite way. The graspable Torah, that which we can comprehend, is referred to as the Torah of Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu gave us the Torah. The Torah is always called by Moshe Rabbeinu's name. That's the Torah, Zichru Torah Moshe Avdi, as the Pasuk says. So there's a package deal. We are able to get the Torah of Moshe, and along with the Torah of Moshe, which is the intellectual brilliance of Torah, we need to be able to acquire, and we're called upon to access the para, that which is the infinite aspect of it. By the way, I once heard from Rabbi Jacobowitz from Ann Arbor, who speaks about the inherent meaning of Lashon Kodesh. The Lashon Kodesh is not just a symbolic language, but that there's every word in Lashon Kodesh stems from another word and has inherent deep meaning. So he said, let's take the example of a para. So we find the first mitzvah in the Torah is pru uruvu, be fruitful and multiply. Right? Take a look at which animal, he says, is the one animal in the entire animal kingdom that constantly, constantly gives. It's the famous story that Meir Shapiro came to raise money in the United States for his yeshiva and met with a very, very wealthy man and asked him for a donation for the yeshiva, and this person said, look, I'll leave you some money in my will. So Meir Shapiro said to him, why is it that in the world the cow has a very good reputation and the pig has a bad reputation? He said, most people think that because the cow gives meat and milk. He says, the fact is that from pigs you have bristles, and there's also meat, and there's hides, and there's pig skin. Why does it have such a bad reputation? He said, the reason is that the cow gives while it's alive, and the pig only gives after it's dead. He didn't get a big donation from this guy. So Rabbi Jacobowitz said that the word para, which means to give and to give and to give, is the name of this animal that is the most giving life. You know, it is the animal that sustains and gives life in so many different ways. If I remember correctly, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that speaks about who a person should learn Torah from. A person should learn Torah from a Rebbe who is Dayma L'malach Hashem. Rebbe who's compared to an angel of God. That's who a person should learn Torah from. If he's not compared to an angel, then you shouldn't learn Torah from him. So one of the Svarim says, what is the simin as to whether or not you learn Torah from a Torah true Rebbe? So this commentary said that the method is that if you learn from somebody who is not a true Torah figure, the information you got from him will be exactly that. That's all you'll maintain. All you get is that information. If it comes from a Rebbe who's Dayma L'malach, then you'll find that that information will constantly increase. You'll build upon it. It'll flourish within you, and it'll have generations. The aspect of Torah that creates that fruitfulness, that creates further propagation, if you will, is the aspect of the infinite light of Torah. That means that Rebbe has not only delivered to you the information which is the Torah's Moshe, but is also given of that infinite light. And for that reason, it's called the Parah. It's the Torah that continues to live and give more. Yeah.
Just going back to that question, you said the Argana is considered like the Para, and the Torah that we grasp is Torah's Moshe. But didn't we just say in the beginning that the Para, the Duma, had was like, continued through with Moshe also?
Right. I'm getting there. So, says the Torah, now look in the Chumashim. Hashem says to Moshe, Zois Chukas HaTorah. This is the law, not of Para. This isn't the law of the cow, but this is the law of all of Torah. What does it mean? What are you supposed to do? Says the Torah, says Hashem to Moshe, V'yikhu Elecha Para. They should take to you the Parah, meaning there is the aspect of Torah which is yours, Moshe. That is the intellectual pursuit of Torah. V'yikhu Elecha, in addition to the Torah that you're giving them, which is the intellectual body of Torah, the phenomenal, voluminous, huge, almost infinite aspect of Torah, they should understand that when they learn Torah, don't get lost strictly in the brilliant challenge of the information. Make sure they take along with it, that they create the package, that they take the neshama with the Torah, that they take the neshama of Torah with the body of Torah. Because only then is it tamima. Only then is it something which is whole. Because if it's a body without a soul, or if it's a soul without a body, then you're dealing with a half a being. If it'll be v'yikhu elecha, para, if they take along with the body, with the intellectual Torah, they take the para, then it's tamima, then it's a whole Torah, then it's a being with a body and a soul. He says, what's the aduma? The aduma, he says, comes from a language of illumination. And he says something very clever. He says that the Baal Shem HaKadosh said, the Pasuk says, the Torah of Hashem is Tamima. Right? That the Torah of Hashem is Tamima. The Baal Shem HaKadosh said, what do you mean it's Tamima? So many people have taken from it. So many people have gnashed from it. So he said, that's the Torah of Moshe. The Torah Hashem, very few people have ever taken anything. It's still whole. It hasn't been touched. So he says that it is more so in our times than in any other time that we need to focus on this aspect of Torah observance. More so now than ever before. Because we are lacking the neshama of Torah more than past generations. And for that reason, it requires focus and attention to remember what it is that we're trying to accomplish as we pursue Torah and Torah observance. Asher le'ola aleha oil, the reason that people don't access Torah in this way is because we lack the yoke. If we would, before we sit down to study, before we sit down to perform, if we would bear in mind that we're accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven and that we want to integrate this in a whole, full way, then we would integrate it, we'd be able to access the fullness of Torah. There are two Chazals. Chazal tell us, Yerushalayim was destroyed shalei berchu b'Torah tchila, because they didn't say berchas haTorah. They studied Torah, but they didn't say the berchas haTorah. And there's another Chazal that says shehemidu dvareim al din Torah, that they paskened everything halachically. Everything was precise with the halach. I think based upon this Maranayim, I think we understand what's going on here. You know that we understand that in Torah, in the conduct of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that everything is Midah connected Midah. There needs to be a correspondence between a punishment and an act. We don't believe in haphazard. What do we call it in parenting? They call it consequences. Right? Well, where's the consequence here? Why? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam, because Klal Yisrael don't say Berachas HaTorah, therefore the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Where is the Mida Keneged Mida? Based upon what the Maharanayim is saying, we understand very well. There are two aspects of service. There is an external service and there is an internal service. There is action and there is heart. There is wisdom and there's insight. Insight. Birchas HaTorah. Is designed to drive home to us that when we're studying Torah, we're not off on an intellectual trip, but that this is a form of service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a method that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us to be able to access the Ribbono Shel Olam in a whole way. And it can't be just an intellectual pursuit. When we're dealing with Din Torah, when we're dealing with the understanding of Halacha, the structure of judgment, a person needs to take into account that there's more going on here than that which meets the eye. So when these aspects of service, when Torah became strictly an intellectual pursuit, when it lacked this Shleimus, and the Bach basically says this in the laws of Birchas HaTorah. He says, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, if you're not interested in my presence, if your study of Torah is not to bring me with it, then I will pick up and leave. That's how the Bach explains this Gemara of Shalei Berachu B'Torah Techila. Because the Birchas HaTorah, the Baruch Ata Hashem that precedes the study of Torah, is that aspect of the study of Torah which is designed to bring God into the picture, which is designed to drive home the fact that we have access to the infinite light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That concludes the Maranayim. I just wanted to share with you a thought that I shared with the guys yesterday at Shalosh Shudas. At a bris, the bracha given to the child, the response given to the bris, is k'shem shenichnas lebris, ken yikanes the Torah l'chopa l'masim tov. Just as the child has gone into the bris, so too shall the child go into Torah and chopa and good deeds. What is the just like? What aspect of this are we talking about? Some people think that It means that the child still should be carried around by their mother and father as they enter the chuppah, the Torah chuppah ma'asim tov. Right? That's why one of the reasons that they father and mother dragged the chosn kala to be fulfill the mitzvah of k'shem shenichnas the bris. The kid didn't want to go to the bris willingly either. Right? But it's obvious that there's something deeper going on. There's some aspect of the bris that we're trying to bring, or that we wish that the child will bring to the rest of his avodah. So I came across Yismach Moshe, which I found very, very intriguing. Yismach Moshe says that in Shulchan Aruch, as we know, that there's a halacha, everybody's familiar with this halacha, that if a person is faced with a challenge to fulfill a mitzvah, let's use it in the negative. Either you violate this mitzvah, or someone says they will kill the person. But the halacha is that the person should violate the mitzvah and continue to live. Right? That is the exception of three cardinal mitzvahs: adultery, idolatry, and murder. those three things, the halacha is yeherig valyava, their person is obligated to lose their lives rather than to transgress those three mitzvahs. Idolatry, adultery, and murder. But everywhere else, somebody says to a person, you eat this ham sandwich or I will kill you, the person should eat the ham sandwich. That's the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Comes the Rama. The Rama writes that a bal nefesh, that somebody who is exceedingly religious, they have the right to say, I will be killed and I will not transgress. That's what the Rama paskens. Says the Yismach Maisha, he says twofold. First of all, I've never heard anything like this. He says, since when do you have such a fundamental halacha, and the Rama would come along and disagree with it? What's more, we learn this from a pasuk. How can the Rama say that a person has the right to die rather than transgress? We learn from the pasuk. The pasuk says, come on, ladies. V'chai bohem, you should live in the mitzvahs. V'loi shiyamus bohem, darshan chazal, you should live in the mitzvahs, but you shouldn't die for the mitzvahs. So how does the Rama come off saying that you have the right to die where the pasuk says v'chai bohem, you should live in the mitzvahs and not die with the mitzvahs? Says the Yismach Moshe, a phenomenal thing. He says you have two types of people in the world. You have a person who has a life, make a living, they have a family, they play golf, they do whatever people do, and in addition to that, they are Torah observant Jews. Okay? For them, the Torah says, V'chai bohem, I want you to live, and I don't want you to die. He says, however, you have a category of person whose life is defined by Torah and its observance. They don't have a separate life. Their lives are defined by their Yiddishkeit, by their, that's what they get up in the morning for, that's what they go to sleep at night for. It's all, everything revolves around their Torah fulfillment. You take away the mitzvah, there's nothing left. So he says there's two ways to read this pasuk. The way number one is v'chai bohem. You should live in Torah. You should live in the mitzvahs. Meaning that's how you should define your life. To that person, the moment they're forced to violate a mitzvah, life becomes purposeless. There's no meaning to it. For a person like that, that's it. For a person who has a life outside of Torah, then you have the drasha of v'chai bohem v'lo shiyamus bohem. So the Rama comes along and says, there's really two ways of reading this pasuk. For the average person, the Torah is saying, v'chai bohem v'lo shiyamus bohem. Don't cause your death. But I want you to understand that if you define your life through your fulfillment of mitzvahs, that person has the right to say, I can't live this way. Ramatala of Harnastapel had a son-in-law, his name was Reb Elisha of Garlitz. It's a character. Reb Elisha was taken away to Siberia. And had survived all the way till Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach night, or whenever it was, the day of Erev Pesach, they were not able to get shmurah matzah. All they could get was plain matzah. So Reb Elisha became aware of what was going on. So they showed him the matzah. So he says, for this I lived. Draped himself in his talis, lay down in bed, and died. And we're not even dealing with an avera there, right? He said, I didn't live to eat matzah pshuta on Pesach night. That wasn't the purpose of my life. There is a disciple of Reb Pinchas Karetz. We almost went to see him when we were in Russia. His kever was, I think, 3 hours away from where we were staying. So this particular disciple was known as never to utter a word that was not absolutely true. If he'd come in from outside and somebody would say to him, "Is it raining outside?" He would say, "When I was out there, it wasn't raining." That's how he would respond. It had to be absolutely 100% true, or he would not utter these words. It was known. Anyway, there was a Jew who was an unethical person, and this Jew violated some law of the land, which carried with it the death penalty. Okay? And this Jew did it. Whatever the action was, he did it. Right? Now, the activists on behalf of this Jew went to the authorities, claiming the Jew was innocent. The authorities knew this tzaddik. I think he was from the city of Zbarv, I think it was. Anyway, so they said, you know what? If this tzaddik and Rav Moshe Leib of Sasev will come and testify under oath that this Jew didn't do this action, we'll let him go. So they asked the Shaila, and the halacha came back, to spare the life of a Jew, you're obligated to lie. That's the halacha, right? You got to spare the life of a Jew. You take a false oath. That's what you got to do. Saving a life takes precedence over everything. So they accepted the psak. The night before the court case, this Revelvel called together his children and said, "Kindalach, I have never lied since whatever age it was that he had undertaken this. I understand that the halacha says that if I'm alive, I have an obligation to save this Jew." He says, "But I have no obligation to be alive." He gave his last will and testament, went to sleep that night, and didn't wake up the next morning. So, Rav Moshe Leib went and testified and saved the Jew. Right? Because if he wasn't alive, he wasn't obligated to testify. There is a level that we all understand that when it comes to the three cardinal sins, that's part and parcel of who the Jew is. We know that tens of thousands of Jews went to their deaths rather than to convert to Christianity throughout the ages. That doesn't raise any questions, but that's a given. Why? Because that's who we are. That's embedded in the DNA of the Jew. A Jew won't murder. Rather have his life be taken, because that's part of our DNA. We look at a child going into a bris milah, and we say to the child that there's one mitzvah that's engraved into the body, and that's the mitzvah of bris milah. So we say to the child, "Kishem shenichnas bris," just like your entering into the bris is ingrained in you, it's part of who you are. Kein ikonis l'Torah l'chupa l'maasim tovim. That's how you should enter into the rest of mitzvahs. The mitzvah should become part and parcel of who you are. Zeis chukas ha-Torah. It says this is the law of Torah. The word chayk comes from the word of chakika. Chakika means to engrave, to chisel into something. Say chazal, ein ha-Torah miskayemes. Torah will only endure b'mishem memes atzmei aleh. Only in a person who is willing to die for it. Some non-Jewish scholar who once said, there is no purpose to life unless you have something you would die for. Ein ha-Torah miskayemes. You want to know when Torah has become part of you? If a person would be willing to die for Torah, then you know that Torah has become part of who a person is. So we say to the child, just like this bris has become part of who you are, don't become a Jew who Torah is frosting on the cake. You should become a Jew whose Torah becomes embedded in your being to the point where it's part of the definition of who you are. That's a goal. It's something we grow into. It becomes more and more, hopefully, part of who we are as life goes on. It's not something that happens in a 5-minute period. It would be hard for us to imagine someone who would go to the death rather than speak Lashon Hara about somebody, right? But in other mitzvahs, I shared with you, there was a fellow here in town, married a Milwaukee woman. He was here for Rosh Hashanah. And we were still on 54th Street. And on the way home from Shul, Rosh Hashanah night, he wasn't feeling well. It was actually that year Rosh Hashanah came out on Shabbos. And we took him over to St. Joe's. And in the middle of the meal, a nurse came to my father's house, saying, "Rabbi, you need to come to the hospital." He said, what's wrong with this fellow? Has an estrangulated hernia. If we don't operate, he'll be dead by morning. But we told him he has to sign a document, because we can't operate with him. He says he'll die before he signs something on Shabbos. She says to us, is that correct? So we said, nope. So I went over to the hospital and told him he needed to sign the paper. But I was awed at the time, despite his ignorance, that here was a Jew who was, he was ready and prepared. That's it. If it means that I'm dead by morning, I'm dead by morning. I can't violate the Shabbos. He was wrong. But the innocence of it, the honesty of it was extremely striking. Thank you.
So, interesting. Adultery, idolatry, right, it's in the DNA of the Jew. So, why is it in this day and age there are so many Jews committing adultery?
There's something way off.
There's something way, and now.